I'm author Kat Clayton, and my curiosity quills the crime. In the spring of 2020, when the COVID-19 pandemic hit, I thought about different ways I could show gratitude to my readers. Should I write a new book in my series? Two books? Should I give away a novella or post a weekly serial story on my website? Well, I ended up writing the fourth book in my series, but I still needed a gift for my readers. I needed the idea to be different and innovative. I wanted it to be free, fun, and a way for listeners to pass the hours curled up in a comfy spot, sipping a warm beverage during such an unparalleled and difficult time. This podcast is the result of my efforts. Without further ado, here is my gift to you, dear readers. So get cozy and let me tell you a few stories. Welcome to the very first episode of Kat Clayton Mysteries. I will begin with the reading of Chapter 1 of How to Leash a Thief, a Steely and Cuff Mystery, Book 1. In the quaint rural town of Buckleville, Texas, a Good Samaritan, a member of the Citizens on the Watch, reported excessive dog barking and suspicious loud sounds coming from an empty upstairs apartment. Upon arrival, the officers discovered a homeless person known as Sweater Man bludgeoned to death. They found no suspects, no murder weapon, and no barking canine on the premises. Soon, word of a killer roaming the streets of Buckleville would spread like wildfire and turn a quiet little town upside down. Chapter 1. I declared at pie o'clock and shoved a forkful of very, very scrumptious in my mouth as I attempted to decipher my boyfriend's troubled expression when he answered his cell phone, the same phone issued to him by the Buckleville Police Department. Even though I couldn't hear his hushed words, it didn't take Sherlock to figure out the caller had delivered bad news. To distract my curiosity, I dug in for another bite. The yummy combination of buttery crust and the yin-yang of sweet and tart touched my soul. In my book, pie made everything better. I leaned in, listening to Nick's phone call. My cheeky Chihuahua Cuff sat perched on my lap. His head followed my fork back and forth, bulging amber eyes begging. Nick's bull mastiff Trigger snoozed in the kitchen. His massive body lay sprawled on the tile floor, and he was drooling. Cuff had been a moment of weakness while I was driving out of the Buckleville Foods parking lot. One glimpse at the older male pup caged in a rickety wired monstrosity, and I melted. It was love at first sight. My curiosity got the best of me. "Who is it?" I whispered to Nick. I set my pie plate down on the counter and put Cuff on the floor. He padded over next to Trigger and collapsed. He lowered his tiny muzzle between his two front paws and eyed me. With his cell phone glued to his ear, Nick scowled. I glanced over at the framed picture of us from last Christmas. I'd met Nick Campbell last winter at the downtown holiday stroll after he'd transferred to the Buckleville PD. My first real intimate relationship, and I intended to make it last. Before Nick, I was a 25-year-old virgin, a hopeless old-school romantic. Despite friendly advice and prayerful thought from others, who thought we were moving too quickly, I tumbled head over boot heels in love. But our romance had taken a turn for bitter and questionable, like milk gone blinky. Glaring in my direction, Nick reached over and snatched the small notepad he carried while on duty. No stranger to trouble, I recognized the look. Ocean blue eyes narrowed under furrowed brows. His jaw clenched and his hand moved in quick, jerky motions as he jotted down details. "Yes, sir," Nick said. He only called one person sir, Chief Becker. And there was only one reason the chief called Nick when he was off duty. Crime. My eyes shifted to Nick's brass badge on the counter. When I closed my eyes, I could see Pop and Mama's gleaming badges when they both served on the Buckleville PD. Pop had retired soon after losing Mama. He said he no longer had the desire to serve on the department after losing her. I couldn't blame him. I reached up, searching for the sterling silver, heart-shaped locket around my neck. It had been my mother's before she had died. I opened the tiny heart, revealing a picture of me on one side and a picture of my sister Stoney on the other. We must have been 5 and 10 years old at the time they took the pictures. I fastened it closed with a snap, fighting back the tears. Pop and I had lost both of them, the pain still so raw.
"I got it, sir."
Nick's voice yanked me back to reality, his eyes flicking in my direction, his jaw tense. A late evening call on Sunday worried me, and I wondered what had happened. My uneasiness brought back memories of the terrible day that we had lost Mama and how helpless I felt. I didn't know how to help Pop. I didn't know how to process her loss or my pain, and because he dealt with his own feelings, I was on my own. Right now, I wanted to help whatever Nick faced. I attempted to glance at his notepad as he flipped it closed. Like the little black book, he shut me out. A text came through on my cell phone for my friend Daniel. I tried to call Samson at the shop, but he won't pick up. I think I left the door unlocked. Sorry. Well, we lived closer to town than Daniel, so I replied to his text. No worries, I'll go check. 6 months ago, after my Grandma Gertie had caught her hair on fire lighting a cigarette with the gas stove burner, she signed her dog grooming business to me and moved herself into a retirement home. Along with the help of my friend Daniel, now my head groomer, I was the proud owner of Scrub-A-Dub, 3 pups in a tub. Nick's sudden movement caught my attention as he ducked around the corner and disappeared into the hall. I heard his harsh whispers. Murder. Dead body. Steely's shop. I inhaled, pulling in the air deep into my lungs and pushed out an audible exhale. Now was not the time to panic. I begged my asthmatic lungs to behave. I robotically began wiping down the counter, my mind racing at a dizzying speed. Did he say murder? At my shop? A wave of nausea rolled over in the pit of my stomach. Hello, Nick said, snapping his fingers. Oh, sorry. I didn't hear you come back in the kitchen. I must have been daydreaming. I tossed the sponge in the sink, trying to ignore the heaviness pressing down on my lungs. Inhale. Exhale.
I'll say, that countertop shines like polished chrome.
Nick grabbed his keys from the hook on the wall.
Well, what is it? I asked.
Police business, but I might need you to run into town later. For now, stay here and keep your phone on.
He was out the door before I could respond and tell him I needed to go check the front door of the shop. Cuff yipped at me, his sickle-shaped tail wagging. I tossed the fork into the sink, shoved the pie in the fridge, and dashed to the window. The black Dodge truck backed up, a loaded shotgun mounted in the back window, like a Texas badge of honor. I waited for Nick to turn out of the gravel drive and then hightailed it out of the kitchen. Cuff yapped, nipping at my heels. I made a beeline for the living room. Just as I reached to switch on the police scanner, Cuff tangled himself between my bare feet, sending me flying headfirst into the desk. My head cracked against the unforgiving oak. Son of a... Agonizing pain ricocheted through my head. Dizzy, I slumped against the desk. Cuff licked my hands, offering a sincere apology.
You okay, Chiquita?
A tiny, squeaky voice echoed in my head.
Well, who said that?
I glanced around the room. Tiny white flashes filled my vision, an obvious result of my head-on collision with the desk. But where did that voice come from?
Right here!
Where? Nobody answered, and the room was empty except me and Cuff. I closed my eyes and patted Cuff between his ears, soothing my own frazzled nerves. His tiny head trembled beneath my hand.
Well, it's okay, little buddy.
I reached up and rubbed the goose egg forming on my forehead. I think I'll survive. I heaved myself off the floor and sagged into the desk chair, switching to Station 3 of the police scanner. They mentioned the break-in at my shop. My heart skipped a beat.
I monitored the female dispatcher and the officer discussing the situation and the whereabouts of the dead body. A male voice sounded over the radio.
Be advised, we have identified the body. Officer Tripp says his name is Sampson. Last name unknown. No ID found on the body.
Do you mean Sweater Man?
The dispatcher asked.
Affirmative. We found the victim in the empty apartment above Miss Lamar's shop. Blunt force trauma to the head.
I let out the breath I'd been holding and choked back a sob. The man they identified as Sweater Man was none other than Scrub-a-Dub's night janitor and a friend. Sampson had a gentle soul and always kept to himself. No matter what the temperature, he'd always worn sweaters. I closed my eyes and wished the news that I'd heard wasn't real. I recalled the first time I'd met Sampson. One night last winter, after closing up the shop, we discovered Sampson and his huge black and white fluffy mongrel, a cross between a Great Pyrenees and a poodle that Daniel called a pyrodoodle, huddled up against the back of the building, shivering. Daniel and I invited him in for a hot cup of coffee. We all hit it off, and Virgil, his giant, scruffy beast of a dog, was no more vicious than a mouse. Sampson had agreed to clean the shop every evening after closing, and in return, Virgil would get a deluxe Daniel special groom every 2 weeks. I'd invited them to bunk in Grandma Gertie's old apartment above the shop. Well, who would kill Sampson? And what about Virgil? I said out loud to no one. What had happened to that massive sweet mutt? Virgil needed my help. I could feel it in my bones.
Virgil? What about Virgil, huh?
I ignored the squeaky voice and tried to focus. I had to get to town quickly. I switched out of my shorts and tank top for a pair of jeans and a stretchy black t-shirt. Searching around for the first pair of shoes I could find, I grinned when I spotted my favorite pair of camouflage boots. Sporting 4-inch spiked heels and zippers to my knees, the boots rocked. Besides, they added major height to my Thumbelina stature, even if the boots were murder on my feet. Rushing down the hall, I caught sight of myself in the mirror, a plum quarter-size knot perched over my right eyebrow. Holy cow, I'm a train wreck. I raked my fingers through the merlot red tufts of hair jetting out in all directions.
Hurry, Chiquita, let's go!
Disregarding the voice again, I headed to the kitchen. Cuff danced around my feet. Jumping up on my leg, he wagged his tail. Such an eager little guy. Maybe I should head to the emergency clinic and have my head examined instead of looking for Virgil and checking on the shop. Hearing voices could be a sign of a concussion, or worse. I had hit the desk hard. Cuff whined. I glanced into those sweet brown eyes, his head tilted to the side.
Well, I didn't mean to trip you, Chiquita.
I pushed the unpleasant thought of brain damage and the odd voice to the back of my mind. I grabbed my keys and my handbag, making sure my asthma inhaler was inside and headed for the door. As I slid the glass door open, thunder rumbled, a hint of rain lingering in the air. Sweltering summer nights often spurred thunderstorms. I crossed my fingers that the bottom of the sky wouldn't fall out during my drive into town. Cuff whimpered again. I'm sorry, boy, not this time. Thunder boomed again, and Cuff barked. I peered over at Trigger sprawled on the floor, snoring. An ocean of drool pooled around his flabby muzzle. Trigger could sleep through a hurricane. Cuff shivered, begging me with his amber eyes.
Come on, Chiquita. I'm worried about Virgil, too.
My pup barked again. Okay. I bent over and held out my hands. Cuff leaped up into my arms. I traded out the small clutch purse for a paisley sling bag and packed him safely inside. Petite women shouldn't carry large purses, but when you're packing, a pooch that is, they come in handy. Outside, a damp, earthy scent hung in the air. The humidity of an approaching rain suffocated me. The back floodlight streaming through the arching branches of the ancient oak created webbed shadows across the deck. I sprinted through them to my car. I loaded Cuff into my silver Volkswagen Bug and hit the road, driving like a madwoman. My phone rang halfway to town. The word pop scrolled across my stereo screen and I pushed the talk button, connecting the call through the Bluetooth feature.
Hi, Pop.
Are you busy? He asked.
No, what's up?
I lied. I swerved to avoid hitting a frog leaping across the road.
Sheesh,
I mumbled under my breath.
Steels, are you driving?
Well, I didn't want Pop to know where I was going, and I didn't want him to worry.
No, what you need?
Well, something strange came in the mail today. It was a photo of a woman standing in front of the window of an empty room. There was nothing else in the photo. Nothing on the wall, no furniture, just the woman, Pop said. But what was even stranger was the tone of my father's voice.
Well, maybe someone sent it to you by mistake. You know, maybe it was somebody else's mail.
No, they meant it for me. They addressed it to Chief Lamar. As if I hadn't retired, he said.
Well, that was long ago. What are you thinking?
They took the picture from behind the female, so you can't see the woman's face. But her hair, Steels, it's the color of... And his voice trailed off.
Well, was there anything else that came with the photo?
I shivered. Over the years of being the chief of police of Buckleville, Pop had made a few enemies.
Well, 2016 was written across the back.
But Steels, I think... Well, it looks like it could be your sister. I heard him choke back a sob.
Stoney? But she'd been gone for... Had to be going on 15 years now.
Steels, I still blame myself for what happened to her. The argument we had. Maybe if your mother and I hadn't come down so hard on Stoney, she wouldn't have run away. His voice dripped with regret. The photo. I can't explain it. But I feel that that woman... I feel she's being held captive.
Well, you have excellent instincts, Pop. I clutched the heart locket at my neck.
But you said yourself you can't see the woman's face. What makes you think it might be her and not some random staged photo from someone trying to get under your skin?
My heart skipped a beat at the mere thought of my sister. One day I'd woken up and she had vanished.
Well, I don't know. This isn't the first one. I got a picture last week, too. That one had the date of 2001. It showed the same scenario, but the female looked different. Younger. Her hair was shorter, but the same color. Dark brown like Stoney's. And yours before you started coloring it that crazy red.
Pop wasn't a huge fan of my dye job.
Well, why didn't you say anything, Pop? I tried doing the math. 2001 would have been around the same year Stoney had disappeared.
I'm sorry, Steels, he said. I should have told you last week.
His remorse seeped out of my radio speakers.
If you think you're being harassed, Pop, you need to call Nick. He can help.
No, I do not want him involved.
Anyways, this feels like something bigger. Bigger than a police department sort of thing. I just need some time to think.
I wanted you to know in case I head out of town soon.
Out of town? Like where?
Well, now he had me worried. I should have figured he wouldn't want Nick's help. Not only did Pop have a big chip on his shoulder with Nick, for reasons I didn't understand, but his pride and ego were the size of Texas times two.
Well, the envelopes had no return address, but the postmarks were both from Houston. I've got a zip code, which narrows it down.
Well, you can't hop in the car and drive 2 hours with nothing but a zip code to go on.
The need to help my father coursed through my veins.
What was he thinking? Wanting to go head up a one-man investigation in the big city? Alone?
Pop, promise me you won't do anything rash until you talk to Nick.
Well, okay, Steels, I won't.
Good.
Well, I guess I better hit the hay. Night, Steels, he said.
Night, Pop.
I hit the button on my steering wheel to disconnect the call, my mind buzzing. As I sped down the dark and winding farm-to-market road, a doe leaped across. I almost swallowed my tongue. I slowed down and kept my eyes peeled on both shoulders.
You better slow down, Chiquita, before we end up roadkill ourselves.
Disregarding that odd, squeaky voice again in my head, I passed the green road sign announcing Pebble Creek. I coasted over the Steel Truss Bridge and into downtown Buckleville. As I motored by Baker's Bliss,
I thought about my pie at home. The eatery was pitch black, but I noticed a light glowing from somewhere in the back. Maybe from the kitchen? And because I break for pie, I jammed my boot in the pedal, forgetting to downshift. The car lugged, jerking my head forward. Ugh! Switching gears, literally and figuratively, I collected myself and continued on toward my shop. The Shermacks must have a busy week, and given the late hour, they didn't need me bugging them for a slice of pie. I pulled up alongside of the curb, a block from the building which housed Scrub-a-Dub and killed the headlights. Scanning both sides of the deserted street, I switched the engine off and observed the front of my building for any signs of activity. The only movement came from the hundreds of tiny American flags stuck in the potted plants up and down the sidewalk, and the flapping red and white blue bunting strung across the road, declaring the upcoming July 4th holiday. Scrub-a-Dub's storefront appeared quiet. Had the police already wrapped up their investigation? I doubted it, but where was everyone? I pulled the key out of the ignition.
You should wait, Chiquita.
I noticed the yellow tape fluttering in the breeze at my shop's entrance. Bingo, I said, eyeing the telltale sign of a crime scene. I grabbed my asthma inhaler from my bag and took a puff as a precaution. Cuff insisted on accompanying me by jumping up and panting dog food breath in my face. The alternative would be to leave him in the car, alone, and barking, the entire time. Not wise, considering I didn't want to draw attention to myself. Okay, fine, but you have to listen to me and stay in my purse. We need to get in and out, no dilly-dallying, I told him. He wagged his sickle-shaped tail in response and wiggled his way back inside my bag. I pulled out Mama's locket, gave it a quick kiss, and tucked it safely away. My mother, Carol Lamar, had been so brave. I tried to channel her wisdom and courageous spirit so I could find out what had happened to Samson. Heart pounding, I crept out of the car and surveyed my surroundings. Instinct urged me to get back in the car. But someone had killed Samson, my friend, and now I needed to find Virgil, so pull it together, Steely. Okay, we'll run in, look for Virgil, see if we can find any clues to Samson's murder, and get out. No big deal, right? I hoisted my bag over my shoulder and reassured Cuff with a pat as he snuggled inside. We've got this, boy.
Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading. Is your curiosity piqued? Are you wondering what happens next? If so, tune in for the next episode. Be sure to hit subscribe so you won't miss the following chapter. I would appreciate if you would rate and review the show. It's the best way for others to discover the Cat Clayton Mysteries. Until next time, stay calm and sleuth on, my friends.